Well, hello and welcome to episode 134 of the Adoption Fostering Podcast with me, Scott Casson-Rennie, and him.
Very disappointed, Al Coates.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll come to that in a minute. Because well, like
you should be just, a social worker.
You just brought it down from the off there. And I was just going to comment, I don't like this "and im" bit anymore. It's boring me now, so I'm going to change that for next time. I'm not going to say "and im." Yeah, anyway. So why are you disappointed, Al?
I'm immeasurably disappointed because the minister, the children's minister, had to reschedule. He says reschedule, but I haven't told you all of the things that have happened since then. Because it's like a reaction podcast. So I'm going to start at the very beginning.
It's a very good place to start.
Right. This is just a preamble. So if you're not interested in this microcosm of my life, which I'm about to explain to you, if you're not interested, just skip 5 minutes because I'm going to bed in here. So in 2000...
Okay. Can I skip the 5 minutes as well?
You go make a cup of tea. Get yourself back.
Right, go on.
So in 2000, under the previous adoption regulations, I took my wife, my three little children to a local county court to have them adopted. And this was the days when you actually had to go to court and the judge would ask the children, do you want to be adopted? Such a scary moment for everyone involved. Mm-hmm. We had to leave, they had to answer in the affirmative, hopefully. And so it was like a proper, just sat before a judge and all of the whole family's there. And it's like a great moment because you know, he bangs the woody thing and goes, you're now declare you a family or something like that. I can't remember. Anyway, happy memory. Turn the clock forward to 2017. In a moment of madness, at the end of a meeting where I was at the DfE doing one of the adoptive thingy doodahs, I said, hey, can we have a minister come on? So do you remember who the minister was at the time?
I do.
Shall we just go all in or should we just go with diplomatic?
No, let's go all in. Let's shame.
So Bobby G, as he was affectionately known.
Bobby G?
Right.
Oh, I remember us giving them that nickname, Bobby G.
Right. So he was the minister for children and families for a very, well, like 6 months or whatever. But at the time, he wasn't there. He was there. He was just the minister. And they said, oh, absolutely fine. What a great idea. That'd be really like fun. And I went, oh, yeah, cool. And so we thought no more of it until there was like this email and said, were you serious? And I went, yeah, I'm serious.
I remember that day very well.
If I recall rightly, you were very busy with Adoption UK there, clearing out their stationery cupboard or whatever you were doing at Adoption UK, whatever your job was. And I am, so I got into these really long, protracted negotiations, is the only way to say it, where I promised that I wouldn't ask questions that made him look like he didn't know what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And I would, so we had this conversation where I sort of, we negotiated some questions and I, when we discussed what would be good answers, which is very different to our current experience, I have to say. So we had that conversation. And so finally the day was put in the diary. It was, you know, whatever. I think it was December. It was like a Wednesday morning, random time. And we both booked some time at work. Or you hid in the stationery cupboard with a microphone.
I was making tea. I was a tea boy. You should remember the day. That's the problem. I'm thinking you should remember that day, to be fair. But anyway, on you go with your story.
So, but the weekend before, there was a knock on our door. There you are. And it was two officers of the law. Hello, 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 Mr. Coates. We're looking for one of your children. What has happened here? So there was a conversation. My child was not in the house. They were, you know, adult child. I said, well, I don't know where they are. They've, you know, they're gone. And so I called them, and but there was this, I don't know. And so said child, let's not beat around the bush. Said child went on the run. So welcome to adoption, everyone. We all look back and laugh now. And then the day before, and I just thought, well, this is, you know, it is what it is. You know, they're a grown up. They'll have to, yeah. Anyway. So the minister's interview is looming, and I'm kind of, and I don't know about you, Scott, but I get a bit not nervous, but I want to get it right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I'm frightened to talk to a minister. It's like, this is, you know, there's lots of people invested in this, and I want to get it right for all the people who are bothered. Yeah. So I then the morning of the interview, so the interview I think was scheduled for, oh, it was like 1 o'clock, wasn't it? It was something like that. And you'd made an excuse like, oh, I'm just popping to Spa for more biscuits for the office.
I actually remember where I was. I remember exactly where I was because I was making my way back home from London because I'd been in London in the morning and I was rushing home. Rushing I was, and I was walking between somewhere and King's Cross. So I do remember.
Excellent. And I got a phone call from the police saying, hello, hello, Mr. Coates. We have apprehended said child. Oh. And they said, probably it's important that a grown-up comes. And so I had to go and literally, I went through like 3 or 4 police stations, eventually found that my child had spent an evening in the cells and was up before the court that morning at 11. And I was due to speak to the minister at 1. So I dashed to the courthouse and like, this is a whole new experience for me. I don't know about you. I've never, you know, we're good upstanding citizens as courts is. And wouldn't you know it, it's the exact court where 20 years earlier, I'd been taken said children to be adopted. So I started to have this kind of, this time space continuum rift in my head thinking, I've got to speak to the children's minister. And then by now it was like an hour and a half away. And I'm thinking, is this, I have no idea what's going to happen here. So I'm going to just, I'll see how close I can get. What's the cutoff time? And in the end, it got to like 45 minutes before. And we still hadn't been up before the judge. And so a long story short is, it didn't happen.
No, because you said to me, you messaged me and said, would you like to do it on your own? And I went, no bloody chance.
No way.
As if I was going to do that, to just be like, what'd you have for your dinner then last night?
Hiya. Hiya.
And I went, no. And I slowed down walking. I stopped walking.
And then he went and got sacked about 4 days later.
You got him sacked. I think we can safely say you got him sacked, actually.
So that is just anyway, an interesting anecdote. Interesting anecdote. So we've got the new minister coming. We've had several ministers since then. We've had, you know, the phantom minister and the minister who appeared and disappeared and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. We asked the same question again, and we were kind of a very different experience, I have to say. You know, very much more like, yeah, this minister be fine. Just give us a rough idea where you're going to go with your conversation. Yeah, right, that's fine. And then I chased it up this week, and we found out that nothing. It was for whatever reason. I would imagine it's a busy week at the office if you're in government.
I would imagine so. Yeah,
busy week at the office.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. We should talk about that, shouldn't we? Anyway, not about that. So. Literally this morning, I had booked a day off work. So I thought, well, I'm just going to keep the day off work. So I sat having a cup of coffee thinking, well, this is nice. I don't have to do the incident. But do you know what's happened, Scott?
What's happened, Al?
45 minutes before the time I would have been speaking to the minister, though that's all gone, I got a phone call from work. And do you know who's coming to visit us?
The minister.
No. The big O.
The big O.
Ofsted.
Oh, no, really? Oh, yeah. Seriously? Oh, shut the front door.
Yeah. So I'm done with
that. Is that long since you've had them?
Oh, I know. It's bad enough, 4 years or something.
Oh, my God. I hope they're going to dig out your annual reviews.
My appraisal. I have to get someone. So I'm done with the ministry.
Aren't you the registered manager?
Shut up. Yeah, I am.
Anyway, it was nice seeing you. We'll see you in a few weeks, Al. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to, yeah. So I just think that, right, that's it. I'm done with ministers. That's like, they're just cursed. My life gets turned totally upside down. And the good news to that story is my child is a reformed character and is no longer at one with the criminal justice system. That's good.
And I can confirm that because having met said child, yes, that is very true. Very outstanding citizen these days, definitely.
Oh, yes, yeah.
It's interesting because now I visualize in my head, when you mentioned this story, because you've done it a couple of times in private, I now know what the courthouse looks like because I saw it in a documentary, so.
Oh, shut up. Shut up. Anywho, right, we got loads to get through. We realized that there's lots of things that, like, lots of little bits of snippets of news that we thought would be really good, and we've got a few things we'd like to chat about. The first thing is that we have, right, over the next month or so, we're going to be putting out podcasts, lots of conversations where we've been over to the US of A and we've got some American voices to come on, which is kind of a bit outside of what we normally do. So
it is.
It is. And it's off the back of, I think what I saw was this really complicated dynamic online where people were using the same words but talking about different things.
Yeah.
So I just thought it'd be really good to go over and get some experiences from US adoptees and perhaps voices that I'd not heard. So on the day we release this podcast, which is Saturday today, I'm also going to release Brooke and Rachel. And Brooke is an adopted adult. Rachel is her birth parent, and she gave away her baby. Mm-hmm. And they reunited. So that's a fascinating story about the whole culture around giving away your children and how it's kind of perceived to be a really positive thing.
Can I just ask, is that the right language? Is that the language they used? Or is that... I'm one for language, and I could just hear people's keyboards as they write to the complaints department about our language. So I'm just kind of want to clear that up with you.
Yeah, I think that would be how they would describe it. But I found it a fascinating chat because Rachel sort of gives this real insight into someone who saw relinquishing her child as part of her faith as a hugely positive thing, mm-hmm. but then on reflection feels very differently about that. Really interesting to get that insight.
That sounds very interesting. I like the sound of that one. Yeah. Can I just say one thing else?
Please,
can we
do.
Just be clear that you didn't go to America to record these? They actually were done online, just in case, because I didn't do any of them because I wasn't given a business class trip to America. So I said, no, I'm out.
Just not going to happen. Fair enough.
We've
also got a guy called Gregory Luce, who's a lawyer and he's an adopted person. And he was talking about the cost, how much it cost him to get his birth certificate and records.
Wow, really?
Oh, tens of thousands of dollars. And he's a flipping lawyer.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
And it blows your mind, stuff that we take for granted. And then that gives you real context to this idea that people who are incredibly bruised by the adoption system, from it fundamentally, but also the system stuff, and then we come online and go, oh, adoption's great. And they go, bloody isn't. Yeah. And then there's this sort of cultural clash. And then we've got a woman, an adopted adult. And also then we've got, people might know she's a woman called Kerry who adopted from the foster care system. Mm-hmm. She's got a really interesting story about child-to-parent violence, which is it's not even a thing in the US.
No. Yeah,
if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Not a thing. So they're going to be released on a week. So that's a little bit of news there. Have you got news about a thing that we may have done on our Facebook page, Scott?
Why are you asking me? You're the one that did it. So anyway, essentially, to be fair, we have been thinking about how can we bring together everybody who may be interested in listening to the podcast into one place for a while. And last weekend, Al sent that text message that he does when he knows that I'm sitting at home doing nothing, which is never, and said, how about we do this? And I was like, I've been meaning to think about this for a while. So anyway, what we've done is we've set up a community group on the old Facebook page. It's connected to the Adoption and Fostering podcast, and it's called ANF Conversations. That's what it's called, isn't it? Yeah, I think.
Slick.
I don't know.
You should be in PR. You really should.
About as bad as you with a website, nobordersraining.org. Anyway, so we went live with it yesterday. We've got some admins. We've got some really cool admins as well, Like they're just fantastic. And the whole premise of this, and let's just be clear, so it's a way of everybody being able to comment on things that we discuss in the podcast, feedback for the podcast, but also just a community kind of space that's safe for like-minded people to chat about adoption, fostering, special guardianship. We're not into the kind of silencing people, but what we are into is just mutual respect for everybody. So everybody's there for their own reasons. There's social workers in there. There's adoptive parents in there. There's foster carers in there. There's special guardians in there. There's adopted people in there. So it's a really nice mix. And I think that for us, we have wanted to do something like this for a long time, and we've now done it. Membership is growing too fast for my liking.
Yeah, we're up to three.
Me, you, and Mrs. C.
My dog.
There is, you do have to answer two questions before you're allowed in. And basically, all that we ask is just mutual respect for everybody. We're all about challenge. We're all about asking questions. We're all about kind of people debating and having different opinions on stuff. But mutual respect is the key to this group. And if not, you'll be booted out. It's as simple as that. Because I always got his literally standing at the door with a, you know, I don't know, shotgun. I don't know. Ready to just... He's standing at the door with his axe, put it that way. If you don't answer the questions, you aren't getting in. That's what you said earlier, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think it... I'm part of other Facebook groups, and one of the things I'm always conscious of is that I don't want to kind of go too dark. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not that I'm dark, but sometimes you're conscious that you don't want to... And I have been thinking about this a lot, actually, about this. One of the challenges I find about peer support is that I feel like there's a group of people who feel quite excluded from that because they just feel like a real downer in any room. I don't think I'm a downer, but because of the nature of those circumstances, or perhaps I've got questions, and that doesn't mean I'm down on adoption, it just means I've got questions.
Yeah.
So it's a place where we can ask questions, and if you don't want to ask those questions, don't engage. And if you think I'm wrong, I'm happy, you know, I'm really happy for people to say I'm wrong. Just don't call me a dick.
Yeah.
Don't start with me.
But see, I'm the opposite. I'm only a part of two groups now.
Are you?
On Facebook. I used to be a part of every group known to man, and I just got fed up with them because it was just my Facebook feed was just full of adoption, and I was working in adoption and I was living in adoption, and it was on my kind of release. So I left them all. And I think that this one is much more me in terms of, you know, I think that people have the freedom to express themselves, but just be nice about it. That's all. That's all. You know, we got away with it on Twitter for a long time of just having the kind of the peer support community on there. And, you know, I think this is why I'm interested in American stories, because I think that the cultural differences are stark in terms of the reasons, not the reasons for adoption, but the way people go through the adoption process. But actually the outcomes for people who are adopted could potentially be the same in a lot of cases, regardless of, you know, whether it's a relinquishment or whether it's abuse or, you know, neglect, whatever. And I think that's where I'm coming from these days, is I want to hear that chat. I want to hear those stories because I need to learn from it. But at the same time, I parent three children who've experienced it, and I have my own experience. So please, you know, respect the fact that I have my own experience. I've not got your experience, but I have my own experience. And you know, it's nice to think, you know, outside of the box for a lot of this stuff. And that's why I want this group to work. So.
Yeah. Cause I think even though I've got lots of questions about adoption, about the, how it's done, about the validity of it, about whether it's all of those questions.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I don't need support.
Yep, exactly. Agreed.
You know, and even this week, I'm all in this week. So we got offered, we didn't get offered early help. I was in a meeting and early help was discussed. And I said, I'm just not, can I just say no? And the person totally understood why I was saying no. I said, just look, and they went, yeah, totally. I just have to offer it.
Yeah.
But then they'd written on the form, or they'd written on the notes, Mr. Coates has declined early help.
Right. No. So again,
yeah. And I had declined early help. So then I got an email. So then a social worker rings me and says, oh, hello, Mr. And it's like this, you can tell that they're dancing around something. And they finally got to it and said, so you've declined early help. Can I explain that to me? And I went, and I explained exactly what I meant. And they went, oh, that makes perfect sense, Mr. Coates. Fine. And then they write on their notes, Mr. Coates has declined early help. Someone else comes on and says, But it's kind
we'll be speaking to the director of children's services shortly.
I'll be speaking to Will Quince, and he'll say,
yeah.
Is it true you've declined early help?
Yeah. I mean, it's again, it's a language thing, isn't it? It's language, because actually, I'm not being funny. You've probably heard more than enough early help than, you know, than probably a birth family who are going through struggles would receive. And, you know, there's a point where you can only take on so much, you know, like parenting courses or this or that or the next thing. What you need is something a little bit different and thinking outside the box. So to offer that kind of stuff is lovely, but actually you're a long way into this. And I'm not saying you know everything, but the early help stuff you're already doing. You know, you're already fulfilling that kind of role from your previous experiences of getting early help. So,
well, it's really interesting because I've been thinking a lot about this off the back of it and thinking, well, what do I need? Because actually, like you, the danger is I become not arrogant, but I become slightly cocky and think, well, you know, what are you going to teach me?
Yeah.
And a bit blasé. Yeah. And maybe you can't teach me anything, but you might need to be able to redirect me a bit.
Yeah.
And I need someone who has the confidence to come in and go, well, Mr. Coach, you've done a lot of courses, but you're still being an idiot. Do you know what I mean? Because I do need that, because the nature of our experiences that we are living in adversity, it's not adversity that's historic and gone and we're in recovery. We're often living in the midst of challenge and adversity. And therefore, we need people who can correct our course, who can pull us back, who can say, hey, that you went too far or you didn't go far enough. Or so I don't need a course. I need a mentor. I need a...
Yeah.
A voice that's got something to give, you know.
Yeah.
Which is, and I was thinking about that because I was thinking, I'm not sure I've heard it in those terms. I was thinking about writing a course, but then, you know, lo and behold, you know, someone will send me on my own course again, so that'll be like.
Well, maybe that's a good thing.
As long as they pay, I don't mind.
Oh dear, that's hilarious. But yeah, I mean, it's a funny old world because, you know, like here in Ireland, we don't get help. There's no such thing. Bernardo's Island run an adoption group once every 3 months for an hour on Zoom. And that's about the extent of any help that you get. So I get what you're saying, because the only help that we get is really from our local CAMHS, who are fantastic. And, you know, we have an hour session with them once a month, and so does our son, J-Man. And he does his thing and we do our thing. And we had to split it up like that because we were having 2 hours together and we didn't feel able to bring up stuff that maybe we were a little bit concerned about, a little bit worried about. And that really helped us. But that's it. That's our lot. And even then, the experience of adoption here is it's a little bit like the, you know, the kind of...
culturally, it's not
the cultural difference else. In adoption is, yeah. So whilst, like I'm saying, that the outcomes of how an adopted person feels may be the same, or, you know, their experiences may be the same. For parents, it's a little bit trickier than that, I think. And yeah, you just need it now and again, don't you? You need that kick up the butt to say, actually, do you think this? Do you think that? And you're right. I think there is that point where, you know, you've been a parent for a long time and you think, well, I'm a parent. I've done this twice before, five times before, whatever, or four times before, or three times before. It doesn't mean you're a bloody saint at it, or that you're the dog's bollocks or whatever, and that's just the way it is. So we have to remind ourselves of that.
No, and I think to my mind, I'm really keen to explore that. So I've got me after the all people have been and gone, I'm going to sit down and really work out something and maybe put something on, because I thought actually I really would like to explore that idea of when you look at the impact of adversity and living in events that are ongoing, and so there's no that you how does that change your perception of self, and how does it change your perception of your child and your partner and
I think that's something that I could get into with you. Definitely, I've got a lot of thoughts on that as well. So
you're having a feeling, are you?
And I am.
Anyway, we've not even got to the next thing on our list. I have got Secret Squirrel's been back in touch, who I like. That's the name of my man.
Your
on the
informant.
Inside.
My Your informant.
Secret Squirrel sends me more tweets.
Thing is, knowing who it could be, one would be like what I would describe as a secret squirrel as well.
You don't know who it is.
I bet I do. I bet I do. I know more people than you know.
I work hard to make you think you know more people because I know more people, and that's my superpower.
Oh, I tell you, I could share gossip with you tonight, but I'm not gonna. I'm gonna keep it. So,
all right. Oh, well, and so Somerset judgment really quickly. There's going to be a ruling within the next 2-3 weeks. The key things that have sort of come out of all of this is that, firstly, it's an incredibly stressful time for a lot of families, especially off the back.
This is about the. You have to remind people they may not have listened to the last episode.
That's true. So there was a case in Somerset, so hence it's called the Somerset judgment, where there was concerns in relation to a child's permanence report, where it was considered that the medical advisor had not been qualified or had not completed the documentation in relation to the child's permanence report, the CPR, and therefore, off the bat of that, the adoption order was based on this. You know, the CPR forms part of that adoption order. Consequently, then it questions the legitimacy or the legality of the adoption order. Forgive me if you know more than me, and that's a hash. That's a kind of a...
Yeah, well, it's just a brief kind of, you know, description.
Yeah, it's an overview. So some of the things that have been thought about, I guess the first thing is to, like, reassure people that I think what has been kind of said is, look, 99.9% of adoptions remain legitimate, legal, and would not be overturned, mm-hmm. and will not be overturned. I mean, they can't say 100% because you can't say 100%, but that's as close as you can get to it. Mm-hmm. That one of the key areas is that nurses have been used instead of doctors, and the 2005 Adoption Agency Act was quite clear that there needed to be a medical advisor and it needed to be a doctor. It's got into this murky area, but then the 2014 Care Act came out and pushed everything through quicker, and that's where there's this kind of slight disjoint between the two acts, where perhaps nurses have been used for CPRs, and so we're in a position now where a lot of authorities are being told you need to evidence that you've got a doctor in place to reassess those CPRs. Mm-hmm. So there's still questions about how that's going to be resolved, but going forward, sound like a politician. Oof. It seems that all of the adoption agencies will now have to employ a doctor as soon as practically possible, mm-hmm. to ensure that any new adoptions are legitimate and fully watertight. And there's probably going to be a backlog of going back over old ones. So it's a total shower, isn't it? I mean, some agencies will be able to evidence that, but one of the things is it's kind of a procedural thing that there's no, you don't have to evidence you've employed a doctor to do it. You just, whereas other things you have to kind of, like, I'm a registered manager. Ofsted, no, I'm a registered manager because I have to go through a process and it's kind of, so judges are wanting to see letters that they've employed it. So it just remains a really crappy time for a lot of people. So one of the other things is that I think it's going to have an impact on the finances of voluntary adoption agencies. That's going to knack some people up, but also regional adoption agencies, because they're not adoption agencies.
But they should still have medical advisors who, you know, who review prospective adopters' medicals and a child's medical history and stuff like that before it goes through that. They should.
Yeah, but the thing is that CPRs used to go to panel.
Yes.
And because they used to go to panel, they would be then looked at by the panel, and the person on the panel would be a doctor. Yeah. Because they've not been going to panel anymore.
Yes.
They've just been signed off by whoever did the medical.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So that's where the higgledy-piggledy mess. Mm-hmm. So there's some people who've even, they're saying here that there's some people who, you know, potentially there's some people who've started adoption leave only to discover it's been put on hold, you know, and I'm seeing in different groups and stuff, people saying literally it's just, they've just been told at the point of matching, at the point of introductions, have been told stopping everything until we get this legal.
Blimey O'Reilly.
Which is a bloody nightmare.
But it's not just, I mean, I understand, I get it. For the parents, but imagine if you're a child who's been introduced to your new family through photographs and videos and FaceTime or whatever they've used, and then all of a sudden it not necessarily stops. I hope it doesn't stop. I hope they continue on with that. But the delays then, because, you know, a day for a child is a long time, you know.
Yeah.
And if you're talking weeks and weeks of delays for that child, that's when it becomes a real issue, because it's just adding to the trauma, isn't it? Let's face it.
If they know, yeah. I mean, I guess a lot of children, well, I don't know, if they're in that process of being introduced, if they know, if they don't know, then it kind of, it just, it's a...
I mean, we're talking like two, 3 years up.
Yeah.
You know, if you're younger than that, then chances are that it's kind of more about the kind of nurturing things that they, that you do before kind of introduction start. But, you know, it's just, it's...
But even birth parents, if you think, you know, you, if you're, what is probably, well, is it undoubtedly a difficult experience of losing your child through adoption, forced adoption, you know, non-consensual adoption.
Yeah.
And then to discover that that wasn't legal.
Yeah. And potentially that then gives you kind of maybe false hope in some ways that, you know, you might be able to have your child back at some point and all that sort of stuff, depending on, you know, how they feel, how their brains work, and how they, God, blimey, what a mess. What an absolute mess. And it does make me wonder if I'm not saying that panels are all like singing all dancing, but, you know, they should be. But it does make you wonder if taking the CPR responsibility away from panels has had an impact on this. Because, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I remember saying
to streamline it.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember, God, some panels used to go on at 6, 7 at night when I did my local authority ones, when we used to include the CPRs. And it was no issue. I mean, God, blimey, you know, that was, so you used to do one approval or deferral, and then you'd go on to a child's CPR, and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you might do the matching as well, you know, at the same time. It was hard work, but it was, it just felt like that was right. And when they took away that panel responsibility, I have to say that I was only a couple of years into my panel experience, so I wasn't fully versed in all the kind of ups and downs, legal blah blah blahs, but it felt wrong to me that should be taken away, because there is a quality assurance issue with anything that goes through this kind of thing. Because if someone's just typing up notes and it's not being quality assured by independently, then there's always an issue, isn't there? So it does make you wonder.
Yeah, having said that, I was on panels when we did CPRs, and my frustration was that we never didn't want, none ever got stopped by us, because they were just generally, it was like, have you considered this? Yes. Have you considered that yet? So yeah, I think I didn't feel the same way, but with hindsight, what they're saying is that potentially that it needs either a guidance change or a legislation change, which is a whole.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not disputing what you say there about the kind of end result. If it came to panel as a CPR, then the chances were it was definitely going to be that the child was going to go for adoption. But I'm talking about the content of the papers. I'm talking about the assessment of, you know, blah, 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 the medical, you know. We always had a legal person on the panel. They're no longer there either, because it just gets glanced at by someone in the legal team these days, rather than them having to sit on the panel.
That's true,
because the legal advisor and the medical advisor both disappeared off panel when I did the local authority panels, when it changed from CPR. So there's a bit of a potential issue with that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a freaking nightmare, the whole blasted lot. And if you're a family affected, or you're in any way connected to this stuff, it must be just awful. In some ways, it seems like a bit of a, you know, if to us, it feels like a, but this, you think this sort of thing, accidentally adoption was abolished because we couldn't get our legislation in line.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Mm. And given the state of things, you know, and the world's gone to crap. I don't know about you, but I'm doom scrolling.
Generally, yeah.
The whole, I mean, we thought COVID was crap, but this, I don't know about you, but we were hoping to get someone on tonight to talk about, you know, how do you support children through crap news, but we'll maybe get that person on soon. But I don't know about you, but I'm just doom scrolling.
Oh, all the time. All the time. And the kind of the conversations, I mean, I think it's a relevant thing for us to talk about, really, is all that's going on in the world. You know, yes, we had COVID, that was bad enough. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's a country that, and a leader of a country that seems to think that he's got the right to, you know, just take away everybody's liberty and freedom. But you're right, it's very difficult to have conversations with young people who really don't understand how this stuff works. And in actual fact, an example would be just before you and I started talking, took Jacob to rugby, and we were talking about the price of fuel for the car.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like ridiculous. Last night, the government here decided to take off some of the excise, the duty, whatever it is, reduce the duty on it. So it brought the price down because it was over €2 yesterday per litre. And he was saying, I don't care. And I was like, what do you mean you don't care? You know, we had this discussion. And essentially he said, you know, I understand how it affects you, but it doesn't affect me. And
I'm all right, Jack.
Yeah, exactly. And I said, so when, like in 10 years time, when you've got your own place and you're having to pay for heating and all that sort of stuff, that's when it will affect you. He said, yeah, but it doesn't affect me now. I said, okay, so let me tell you that, you know, when you say stuff like that, when Dad and I are worrying about how much oil we can afford to put into the tank, because like you, I mean, you're rural, so you've got oil heating. We're in Ireland, so gas heating is very rare. So it's oil heating. So a man comes with a big tanker and he gives us so much. Like 6 months ago, a tank would have cost us €300 and now it's costing €600. So it's doubled in price. So I was trying to explain to him, that, you know, we have this concern about, you know, if we were to run out of oil, how much could we afford to put in? Can we afford to heat the house? It's very cold at the minute as well. It's probably one of the coldest experiences I've had in Ireland, actually, is this winter. It's just been so cold. So trying to explain that to him, and he was like, yeah, but I don't care. It doesn't concern me. And when we're talking about things like the Ukraine and Russia, it's not that he doesn't care. He's very passionate about it, but it's just the lack of kind of understanding about why, you know, why hasn't somebody just taken him out? Why hasn't the sniper gone in and taken him out? You know, it's that kind of thing that is really hard to kind of explain, because, you know, we've been here before. We've been here before with two other dictators in my lifetime anyway, that I remember of. So Bin Laden and Hussein. And, you know, it takes time for that kind of thing to happen, because they have to apparently commit so many other crimes before they can be done. So, but trying to explain that to people, to young people, is really hard, because they're very black and white about some of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's teenagers are complicated at the best of times. And I think that there's that.
Well, no shit, Sherlock.
And so there's a callous, I mean, I remember being not affected by anything at like 15. I can remember, you know, the Enniskillen where the mudslide, and mm-hmm. there was like it must have been the 10th anniversary or the 20th anniversary. And remember just like me going, whatever. And my parents been like appalled at my callous attitude. And I just couldn't, but like that Jacob thing. But I think then children who've experienced adversity and trauma, there's always that question in my mind is how's this? So I was thinking about what's her face, the little one. And my children have never been, I've always been quite matter of fact about all of this stuff with my children, and we've never had it's odd because I think that but I don't know whether it's because I set a tone of it's all going to be okay, you know, and I wonder whether that sometimes that we are, you know, that whole attachment thing of, you know, children see the world through, we are the lens they see the world through. So if, you know, if I'm like literally head in my hands going, oh my goodness, we're all doomed, then my children are worried. But I'm kind of like, this won't wash up at our door. This is what it'll mean. You know, this is very bad. But so I think there's all of that stuff. And, you know, now I've had to break back, you know, I've had to talk to my children about, like you have, about really crappy, difficult things in relation to their own lives and experiences. And there's just, I think that sometimes children really appreciate that honesty. But that reassurance as well. That, but yeah. This is, you know, the bombs aren't going to be falling on rural Northumberland,
yeah,
or Ireland.
I think that's quite an interesting thing, because all three of mine are the complete opposite of us. So we can try and downplay stuff, or we'll say we're concerned about stuff, and they're like, why? You know, it's the complete opposite. So they could be worried about stuff that we're, you know, we've said there's nothing to be concerned about. But on the opposite token, you know, I'm not saying that I'm worried about what's going on in Ukraine, but, you know, there's a lot going on there if the world starts to get involved. And the potential for the fallout is quite high. So for me, you know, you talked about doom scrolling. We were on holiday when it all happened. We had a TV. I refused to switch on because I didn't want to kind of, I did that with COVID in the beginning. The TV was on all the time on the news channels, and it just got to the point where I literally couldn't take in anymore, and I was just so down about it all. And I feel like this has been the same. It's not that I'm ignoring what's going on. It's just I have to look after myself in that, because I know how it will go. You know, yesterday, the bomb that was dropped on a maternity hospital. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, Russia can say what they like. That is what happened yesterday, because, you know, the propaganda that goes around these things with that country is just ridiculous. But It just gets too much for us as adults. And you know, while our children are intelligent beings, they have their own thoughts, they have their own views. It's just sometimes for us, it's very difficult for them to understand what they should be worried about and what they shouldn't be worried about. You know, Jacob's worry this week is the fact that we haven't bought him a ticket for the ball that's on Saturday night, you know, and it's now Thursday. And we're like, yeah, but we'll get it because it'll be cheaper on Friday. You know, but he doesn't see that. But that's his worry this week. He's not worried about what's going on in Ukraine. Yeah. He just wants to see somebody who's you know, a sniper take him out, and can't understand why they've not done it yet. You know, we're sitting here thinking, okay, so what happens if, and it doesn't look likely, but what would happen if in the UK they started to sign up young people to, or anybody who was eligible to fight, you know, because let's face it, we're in a modern world where armies and all that sort of stuff have kind of minimized the number of people that they've got in them, blah, blah, blah. We're thinking, what about Fraser? You know, he's sitting in the UK now. And what if they transcripted kids and young people because they had to, because they need those people to go and fight? You know, that's the kind of stuff. It's not...
We're a long way off that, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, I know. But it's not my immediate... That's what I'm saying. It's not my immediate worry, but it's in the back of your head. You're thinking, okay, so what would happen if, you know, half of Europe was wiped out as a result of the Russian invasion of the Ukraine kind of thing. So, you know, we've all got our own different kind of worries and perceptions of it. Does it keep me up at night? No. But do I wake up thinking about it? Yes, I do. So, you know, if that's where we are, where are our children at? You know?
Yeah. And it's very pervasive. And I was conscious of this at the beginning of the lockdown, is that, I remember just... 5 o'clock news conference is coming on, and it's important stuff. You can't just go, come on, children, let's play with jellies. It's like, I do wonder whether how much of it is personality of my children, or whether it's how much of it is led by how we have managed that. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's made me really question my parenting and about how I do support a 10-year-old in the midst of all that. I mean, we haven't got littler children, which is different again. Oh, I suppose we have got a little child in the house. We've got a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old in the house. Oh, but she's like got the spirit of a Viking. She's up for it. So she's fairly oblivious to that. But if you were like 7 and 8, you kind of know stuff's going down, because people are tense. Yeah. And, you know, we're having conversations like you. It is interesting, because you think, well, we're having conversations about money, because we're going, right, okay, well, like you, I bought oil and it's double the price. And you go, well, that's a real thing for grown-ups. Have you ever seen the documentary Resilience, where there was this really interesting comparison where they sort of talk about how for us, adult worries are mortgaging, but children still have worries and children still have concerns. And I think, it's how do we keep our kids safe in the midst of all that, and not let our anxieties, firstly, because I know that if I do get anxious, and I can get anxiety, then I'm a crap parent. I'm arty, yeah. I'm moody, I'm tetchy. I don't want to give my kids the time that I should, you know, that maybe they want or deserve.
You've just described me 24/7. Sorry about that.
What, tetchy and arty and wanting my attention? It's really tricky.
Yeah.
I mean, little things like I've stopped putting the heater on in my office, so I've taken to wearing a blanket to work.
No, really? What, over your knees?
Yeah, over my knees.
Oh my days. Have you got fluffy socks on as well while you're at it?
No, look, it's this there, look, I can show you it. It's my blanket.
Oh, your little blankie.
I've got that in Kenya, that way.
Oh, did you? Well, that will be warm then. Yeah. We're no different. Look, we're no different. And the thing is, I guess my thing is that our children have probably been through something like this before without even realizing it. With, you know, when I say our children, I mean like generally our children who have been placed for adoption. You know, they may have lived through times where financial hardship was a big issue, and you know, heating, food, etc., was a really big thing, and you know. There's only so much we as people can do. You know, we can go out and work extra hours to pay for being able to put the electric heater on in the office, like you're talking about there, you know, or, you know, I don't know, putting extra oil in, or, you know, I'm seeing like on social media, people's direct debits being increased for their energy, certainly in the UK, and it is happening here as well. I have to admit, you know, this house that we live in now compared to last year is probably two thirds of the size, but our energy bills are like three times as much as they were because stuff has gone up that much. And I guess my concern is that, you know, children think that our children, young people think that this is a norm. And I don't want it to become the norm for them, but the world is in just such a place right now where there's so much going on. And you know, COVID hasn't helped, but certainly what's going on in the world right now is definitely not helping, you know. An 88% increase on the cost of housing in America since the end of COVID. 88% increase. That's huge. And not the whole of America, but in one specific area of America. I read that today. Could be fake news. But, I don't know.
But it's interesting, though, because I think that we grew up in a time of, we're a unique generation that we grew up in a time of peace in Europe. You know, and that's come to an end, and the rest of the world's been dealing with this shizzle for years. But there's that interesting idea that when I do the adverse childhood experience training, one of my first slides is like, adversity is normal. Mm. That adversity doesn't have to be trauma, that actually crap happens to everyone. This is more of the same. It's kind of we've had the COVID, which was like a collective crap for everyone. collective crap, not a collective crap.
A big old turd.
Yeah, it's a very different thing. And again, it's about if parents can support their children. And that was the whole John Bowlby thing, you know, about, you know, children who'd been supported by their parents through wartime versus children who'd been removed. Mm. And so, for me, it's kind of that, just maintaining that connection, that just being solid for your kids. And you're not, that doesn't mean you have to kind of bottle your feelings up, but I think it's about you acknowledging your feelings, but supporting and going, yeah, it's okay to be freaked out, but we're together, we love each other, you know. And, you know, like even like the financial stuff, you go, well, yeah, we maybe need to move house, we'll never meet, but whatever happens, we've got each other.
Yeah.
And for children, that's probably much more tangible and important than it is for us. I read this great book, and it was a book about faith, actually. It was really interesting. And it's a wonderful book, and see if I can find it. It's called Ragamuffin Gospel. And I don't know, it is about God, but there's a great bit at the beginning. It says, it describes the scene of children eating pancakes on a Saturday morning. And it says, the children don't worry about if there's enough money for pancakes. The children don't, they just know that mum or dad or whatever makes the pancakes. And that parent creates an environment where there's just pancakes. They don't worry about if there'll be pancakes next week. They don't worry about, you know, the Ukraine not producing enough wheat to create pancakes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's just pancakes here and now, and it's good. Mm-hmm. And so it's like that trying to bring things down into now. This right now is good. We've got each other, and that's, and yeah, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but right now is really positive, and we can't change what's going to happen tomorrow because all of these events are outside of our control.
Sadly.
That's turned into a little sermon. So if you want to come forwards and get some prayer.
I mean, to be fair, we could control it. If I mean, according to Jacob, if he had an AK-47, he'd go tomorrow and just sort it all out. You know, I'm not sure it's that simple. I keep trying to say that to him, but you know, at least the will is there.
Well, like Mrs. Coates keeps saying this thing. Why doesn't someone just shoot him?
She's on the same wavelength as Jacob.
Yeah, absolutely. Why does someone just shoot him? You go, why? It's complicated. Quite fond. I like a lot of them. Quite fond of him. Anywho.
I think that's getting less and less each day, but yes.
Yeah. Do you know what? We did have another thing on our list, but I think we should maybe leave that because we've done almost an hour.
I think we should. I think it's been a mix tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A smorgasbord of topics.
Yes, exactly.
A veritable banquet.
Hopefully a little bit of laughter and banter thrown in for good measure.
Amidst these difficult, troubling times. We have got Sally D in the Wheels of Steel coming up soon, haven't we?
We have, yeah. The book has arrived. I need to just flick through it. It's not what I expected to land on the doorstep.
Well, me neither.
I thought it was very small for Sally, because Sally has a lot to say. Excuse me. And I haven't even opened the first page, because it arrived when I was on holiday, so I haven't had a chance yet. But, it's almost like pocket-sized. It's not. It's a little bit bigger than pocket-sized.
Got big pockets.
Yeah, big pockets. it might affect your hips if you sit on it. But I was surprised because it's different to our last couple of books in terms of the size. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to having a look at that. But I think it's a very different kind of a style of writing, maybe. I don't know.
It's a different, yeah, it is. I think it's a totally different genre. It's because she wrote the children's books and she wrote the adult books, and this is kind of a somewhere in between.
Yeah.
I was going to get one of my children to read it because I feel like it's a child's book. So I was going to maybe read it with one of my child.
Yes, I did that. Do you remember I did that with one of the books that Jacob did a podcast on it, didn't he, for us?
Yes, that was last year.
Yeah, and I think it's a fantastic way of kind of really getting to the bottom of it. Because if we read it and they read it, then we kind of have a kind of mid-ground in terms of, what it's all about. So and we haven't had Sally on for a long time because she's been off doing various different things, hasn't she? Yeah.
Swimming. A lot of swimming going on
in the sea.
There.
In the cold.
Hardy. Hardy lady.
It's about as bad as you traipsing through rivers when you go out walking your dogs. Oh, and I have to say this as well, just before we end. I got a text from Al this morning, and I have to read it out to you. Because
read your text, and then read my text. No.
Where are we? I just need to scroll back a little bit. Because, the minister has bailed.
Right, so that was, yeah.
That was yesterday. I won't read out my reply because it's not very good. I did a couple of conversations yesterday. I recorded the first time in ages, find a time, sit down and talk to Ryan and Chris separately. Ryan, an adopted adult in Scotland, and Chris, an adopted parent in the UK, shall we say, who adopted through lockdown. And of course, my technology isn't great. So just to give you the background, at 6:22 this morning, I got a text from Al Coates. Yes, dear listener, 6:22 a.m. My alarm is set for 07:30, and I normally wake up about 07:25. But there was a text on my phone at 06:22.
Did you manage to...
you're off your nuts. Did you manage to record the convo onto your computer? If so, wang them into the podcast, intro the podcast drive and send me the link. There should be two audio files and a video. I put, yes, I did. I'll sort it out for you later. I haven't a clue how to access the drive, but I'm sure it will work out. The next text I got was, come on, you dirty bitches. Now, I'm not sure who that was aimed at. And I read it and I went, is he talking to me and Tris? Because we were having our morning coffee, you know. This was 8:30, just before we set off to work. But it did say under it, sent with Siri. And then the next message was, ha, 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 I was talking to the dogs and Siri took it as a reply to you. Well, I have to tell you, dear listener, that, you know, when Al says stuff like that, you have to wonder what is going on in his life. Come on, you dirty bitches. But these texts, I'm telling you, I will never write a book.
Spit your coffee out.
Yeah, I will never write a book. But if I ever did write a book, it would be our text exchanges. And I would have to use a pseudonym because half of the stuff we text each other, just, it shouldn't be in the public domain. It really shouldn't.
That's the title of the book, isn't it? Come on, you dirty bitches. There you go. That's a window into how I talk to the dogs, and they were dirty, exactly, just in my defense. Yeah. And they are bitches.
Yeah, and I don't think you were with anybody at the time, so you could probably get away with it. But, you know, just next time you say it, just make sure your Siri isn't listening.
That certainly will. Hey, well, that's cheered me up no end, actually, on what has been a very difficult set of days. Yes. I am going to be going into my thought bunker and getting everything ready for the big O. You will be getting more of those texts.
Yeah, but it'll be about different people. It'll be about proper bitches.
No, I can't say that. I'm very fond of my colleagues.
But I can.
That's true.
And isn't one of your colleagues from work doing a little bit of a thing in the Ukraine at the minute as well? So is that person going to be back in time? What's the story?
He is back.
He is.
He came back yesterday. I can't. It's Zippy. So Zippy's back from Romania. So and I'll tell you.
No, I did see it on Instagram.
Zippy. Yeah, okay. I can't tell you that story on air because the story that of this morning.
No, yeah, that's fair enough.
Maybe when the dust has settled, I will share that with the dear listener. Okay, right. Okay, well, I'm going to shoot off and fiddle with some dials and things. So look after yourself
And
stay well. Bon Jovi.
And Jovi.